It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that is why, despite the many begging and pleading moments, I ultimately had to refuse the RNC presidential nomination.
Well, it's probably for the best.
I thought so. Yeah, if he bites you or whatever, you can smack him around.
I mean, when you first told me, I thought you were crazy, but after that explanation, I kind of get it.
Yeah, no. I mean, okay, I am seeing a little bit of things. So, hello, everyone. It's really, really hot and humid. Like, I believe the heat index today is like 110 or something.
I heard something to that effect.
We're under a heat advisory warning for like 4 days, like till from Tuesday till Friday. Friday night is when it stops, which I'm still confused about because based on the weather report, the weather on Saturday is going to be exactly the same as Friday, but a little more humid. So I'm like, why didn't the warning go that far? But in any event, so we are experimenting with having the air conditioning unit on. We could not have done this before because we were right by it, but now we're far enough away, we're hoping this should work. But as usual, what this means is you need to give us your feedback. TheMagicalTalkingHat.com, tell us how the sound is, if this is a problem. But as usual, we're not testing it out first, we're testing it out live on y'all.
That's how we roll.
Yes. So, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that runs the air conditioning while taking a record.
Yep, that's the only one.
Because that's incredibly unprofessional and nobody else would do it. But we make up for a lack of quality or professionalism or effort with apathy and consistency. Consistent apathy.
Yep, very consistent.
Which I think was the slogan of the U.S. Armed Forces in the 90s. I'm not sure. But not now. Anyway, I think I just made a political statement. I'm not sure what the statement was. Oh,
not
holy
true.
Shit. I will kill that little cat. God damn it. Trish got that. I still haven't forgiven her for it. Addie loves it. For those of you at home, if you can hear that little squeaking, it's a little bird that makes a little chirp noise. When you squeeze it, you don't have to squeeze it very hard, and it'll make chirp noise all day, every day, all the time. For those of you just joining us, here's how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has email addresses. In that it has its own email address.
Just one,
the magicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people like yourselves write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. with little comments, notes, topics, questions, things like that. It's exceedingly gross and sweaty servants. It's a hat.
Yeah,
all on its
skip
own,
that part.
Magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's ever increasingly gross and sweaty servants draw those note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. Why don't I put that over by you, since you always draw first. Alright, you may notice a couple of bottles by you there.
I see them, yes.
By overwhelming opinion of our listeners and producers and co-stars, we think you can't do this podcast unless you're drunk. No, that's not it. Those are for you and or your lovely wife.
Oh.
You don't have to share if you don't want. She doesn't listen to the podcast anymore, so she won't know. this is apparently a very fancy root beer that you get up in the border, the boundary waters. Like, they're famous for it. So, as I believe most people know, the producer last week was on a week-long trip with her sister and some other people. Well, her sister was the only one she knew, but they went with a group and a guide and stuff, canoeing the boundary waters. And so while they were up there, they had this root beer, and it's apparently famous and big deal, so they got a case of it. And we're actually going to take it out to Virginia and have root beer floats made out of it while looking at the pictures and videos that they took on their trip. But it's root beer, so I was like, have we got enough to give William some? And she's like, yeah, we got more than enough. So,
oh, well, how nice.
There you go. Because I know how you are about root beer.
Yes, I love root beer.
You kind of, like, you're a high-functioning root beer holic.
I used to think of myself
definitely have a problem.
Somewhat of a connoisseur, but I don't know if I really qualify as that anymore. I haven't really kept up.
Yeah. You have to see, I haven't tried it. I figured I'd wait till Virginia, so I don't know if it's any good. But apparently, lots of people love it, so it should be.
I haven't told people what episode it is or anything.
Yeah, or my name. My name's Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 280.
And clearly, that's the point where what little structure we have, we're giving up on. So
giving it up.
We decided that trying almost not at all is still too much.
Yep.
Anyway, so it's been 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Sure it has.
Not even because anybody was sick, just because the public demands the evil versions of us. I think. So how's your 2 weeks been?
Well, it seems like a lot's happened, but the only thing I remember is that we saw Ghostbusters.
You did. I was going to see it last night, but we were so exhausted because the night before, Addie did not let us sleep, like, at all. So
that's
we're
still
gonna
happening,
see it this
huh?
weekend. No, last night we slept okay. He was mostly not in the bed. But we're hoping to see it this weekend because I really want to see it. How did you feel about it? What did you think? Did you like it?
I think it's going to be one of those movies where I have to see it more than once to really know what my opinion is.
Really?
Which, that's not a criticism.
No, but I'm surprised because nobody seems to think it's particularly complex or subtle or anything.
It's not because of that. I had a similar experience with Batman Begins, which
really?
I liked that film quite a bit. But when I first saw it, I didn't feel like I knew what I thought about it until after I saw it a second
just
time.
Strong difference from the expectations you had?
That's exactly it.
Okay,
that's
really?
Exactly it.
I would not have expected that from Ghostbusters.
Well, the problem with, for me personally, with Ghostbusters was, it's just hard to not have any. I mean, you don't even know what expectations you have.
Oh, of course.
Until you go there, and you watch it, and
well, sometimes I know, but yeah.
And for the feeling it gives me isn't, oh, this isn't very good or whatever. It's just general confusion, as in, why am I not getting this? Why am I not connecting with this? It's not that I think it's bad or good. I'm just not engaging in it. And like
and
I said,
so that could have been as much as just your mood.
That's exactly
like that.
Right. With Batman Begins, it was, you know, like I said, as I'm watching it, what I've determined this is, it's the expectations that I didn't know I had are being thrown into my face.
Mm.
And I know it's me. I know it's not the film. So
well, and this one is tricky because it was so discussed before anyone ever
exactly,
saw
it. Exactly, that's
right. And so, like, my first thought where you're like, I'm not sure, is I'm like, did he go in thinking it was a feminist film? Because that's a thing a lot of people have had. And it's
yeah,
like,
that, no,
it's
that.
Not, and it was never meant to be. Like, I mean, I'm sure there's feminist stuff in it, but nobody sought out to make that. And even
right,
the
right,
people
right.
who like it aren't really claiming that's what's going
right,
on.
Right, right. No, it's not that. It's, but, you know, like with Batman Begins, you know, it's just, you know, you read Batman comics for so long and you're a Batman fan. Even if you don't think you have expectations, you do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, of course, now I like that film every bit as much as I like Dark Knight. I mean, to me, it's a great film. So
it was a great duology.
There's no reason that I shouldn't feel the same about this film if I see it a second time, but I don't really know. The one thing I'm sure I'm going to have a problem with, even if I see it multiple times is I do think that there was something not quite right about the pacing. I think the editing was not done very well.
You are not the first person to say that, and it sounds like some of it may be they ended up for time having to cut too much, and the hope is that they will put some of it back in like a director's cut.
That's only part of it. That is part of it. You do walk away feeling like some of this story got left on the editing floor and they didn't do a very good job of taping it together. It's not just that though. It's there's also pacing issues at the beginning. I don't want to say it's slow or fast. It's just uneven. In terms of like comic timing, some of the pacing is not quite right. Like the person who edited the film had never edited a comedy before, okay, or something. And this is now some of that. I wonder if I see it again, if it won't improve because now I'm ready to sort of get it. I don't know if that makes any sense.
You can notice things because you aren't just getting hit with your first impression.
Yes, exactly. I don't have these glasses on, or you know these.
And there are tons of movies whose opinions I've drastically changed on a second viewing. And sometimes that's with time having passed, and sometimes it's not. And I still have that.
But all of the fundamentals of the film I thought were good. I thought the characters were good. I thought the relationships were good. I thought the plot was good. In all those ways, actually, I preferred it over the original film by far. But the actual execution, the actual putting together of those elements, I mean, because as we know, the editing room is where the story is really told. Yeah. I mean, all the other stuff that's done, the script writing, acting.
If you don't get the shot, you don't get the shot. But barring that,
yeah,
what you show and what you don't show.
Yeah, the editor is the one who puts all those pieces together. Otherwise, it's just a jigsaw puzzle, crumpled on piled up on the floor. So if the editor messes it up, it doesn't even, all the elements could be good and it's not even going to matter. For example, there were virtually no character arcs at all, which was weird, because the characters, even right when you meet them, they're pretty strong fundamentally. The fundamentals of the characters and their relationships is good. There's a good foundation there. But then there's no line, there's no arc at all. And it's kind of confusing as to why that is. Things will happen later on in the film that aren't part of an arc, that they just happen.
Yeah.
Which, some of them are cool by themselves, individual elements, but you're wondering, how did the character get from the beginning of the film to here? There's no story there to tie all that together. But all the performances were solid, I thought. Like I said, the plot, fundamentally, as far as an idea, was good. So have you heard that they cut a whole bunch of stuff out that they might put in a director's cut or something?
But I've heard critics suggest that especially because of the way certain character relationships are portrayed. In particular, I mean, I guess if you're really crazy, here's some mild spoilers here, but keep in mind you're talking to somebody who hasn't seen the film. The major sort of starting point is that Melissa McCarthy's character and Kristen Wiig's character are old friends.
Yeah.
And sort of went their separate ways and now are coming back together.
Right.
During this. And I have heard critics say that they don't really feel that relationship, the closeness and like the history there, doesn't really come across. And that there are even some scenes that feel like the movie is assuming it did come across, but didn't. And the main thing is, people are like, it's Paul Feig, which means he's smarter than that. So there probably is something somewhere that got edited out. And in a movie like this, which is essentially an action comedy, that's the stuff you cut.
Yeah, but why? Was it too long? Or
I have no idea. Like I said, it's not coming from Paul. It's coming from critics who are guessing. But I wouldn't be... I do think I heard that the original cut of really long, so I think there is a lot of extra footage. Mostly, I'm really pleased because it is already literally happening with children, with adults, with all sorts of women are really enjoying that they're seeing female Ghostbusters. Like, one of the critics literally was like, I was just grinning the whole time because when I was a kid, we would play Ghostbusters and I would always had to be Dana or Janine, which are great characters, but they're shitty to play pretend with. And, you know, there's the shot of the one girl at the premiere with Kristen Wiig, and she's dressed in the outfit, and I think that's wonderful. But mostly, I really like Melissa McCarthy. I like Kristen Wiig even more as comedians. I love Leslie Jones, and I would leave Trish for Kate McKinnon if she wasn't lesbian and also liked me and, you know, all sorts of things. I mean, Kate McKinnon might be my favorite non-stand-up comedian out in the world right now.
Yeah, she's good.
I absolutely adore her. And there's no way I'm not going to laugh during it, and that's sort of what I want.
Although, I felt like just about every single character, every single actor as comedians were fairly underutilized.
Yeah, I've heard some of that. But people thought it was funny, and they didn't. But they didn't think it was funny as they hoped it would be with that cast.
Well, as funny as it could be, like that's one of the things that felt like it got cut out. Was there surely were some gags here, maybe even some ad-libbing that happened that ended up on the floor that shouldn't have. You know,
it's definitely possible.
And I'm not sure. I don't know. It really felt like a first act. I mean, you know how that goes when
well, and I think there is franchise hope.
That's right. You know how that goes when they're planning on making a franchise and they just really drop the ball in the first act. Like, they don't, they're thinking of all the future pictures already, and they don't really put the effort into the first act that they should. That right. happens a lot.
And sometimes it happens for both of your superhero movies. Oh, wait. So,
But I will probably, I don't think I'll see it again in the theater, but when it's available on DVD or whatever, I mean, we might even just buy it just because we know they're going to make more, and we did like it reasonably well. And I feel fairly confident that I'll like it
better
the second time around.
There's a, it did an important thing, and I want to encourage that thing. Female ensemble-led comedy and action.
Well,
like, I want to encourage more of those.
Yeah, I liked that it didn't make a big deal out of the fact that they were all, I mean, you know, it was just a Ghostbusters film where the Ghostbusters happened to be women, not...
Well, and from what I've heard, Kate McKinnon's character is quite strange and kind of cool, and like, there's a lot of implications involving personality, involving sexual orientation, involving all sorts of things that are not addressed. Like, they exist there in the character.
And they don't make a big deal out of
exactly,
it.
Exactly, exactly.
No,
and
the,
I think that's a really good thing.
The only thing I would... So when... If people say, well, it's not really a feminist thing, that's actually not a criticism. That's... It is feminist in the sense that it doesn't... It just presents these characters in these situations like it's normal.
Yeah.
It's not feminist in the sense of some statements being made.
It's not a big message, yeah.
Yeah, the characters aren't making some kind of statement, or the narrative's not making some explicit statement. The film, as a whole, is making a statement on the meta level, I suppose you could say, by the fact that it's not making a big deal out of these things in the narrative. One thing I appreciate, though, is how there was really no romantic subplot in the film at all.
Yeah.
I appreciated that because a lot of times...
I've heard that from some places.
A lot of times that's something that people think they have to have. In fact, I kind of wondered after I saw it, so is the reason there didn't seem to be a lot of substance here is because without a romantic subplot, they didn't know what to do with these characters? Mm-hmm. I was kind of scared that maybe that happened. Like, well, we're not going to have a romantic subplot. That's such a cheap thing that people do. And, you know, even though there was a romantic subplot in a way in the original movie...
Not in a way. There was quite literally, explicitly a romantic subplot.
I'm
pretty sure he ended up marrying Dana.
Oh, did he?
Either that or it was a big tragic thing that they broke up. I mean, they were together by the end of that movie.
Oh. I don't remember all that.
Yeah, I remember because there's some really creepy coercive stuff in there. Yeah. In that romance.
So, I was a little worried that it's the writers just didn't know what to do when you took their romantic subplot away. But I think they just cut some stuff out and didn't know how to tape it back together, and I don't know why they cut it out in the first place. It didn't feel like it was long. It feels like it could have been longer without it feeling long. I don't know. I have no idea. And I haven't heard anything about anyone saying, oh, yeah, like with Batman vs. Superman, there was... Everyone talked about, oh, there's 30 minutes cut out of it, and we're going to I haven't heard anything like that about this movie.
That's because I don't think anybody's rushing to defend... None of the filmmakers are rushing to defend this movie.
Mm.
Because, other than the lunatics, nobody's... As near as I can tell, the world as a whole, or I guess the country as a whole, is saying this movie is okay.
Yeah.
Nobody's out there saying this is shit, except for, again, the crazy people who were saying that long before it came out.
Right.
And who mostly, I'm sure, still haven't seen it. And nobody's out there saying, oh my God, this is so amazing. There are people, they are a small number, there are people who like it better than the original Ghostbusters. However, across the board, those are people who were just lukewarm about the original Ghostbusters. I mean, there's nobody who loved the original and is like, and this is even better.
I haven't heard that anywhere. I guess I was not like a huge fan of the original. Yeah. I mean, I liked it.
I was in a lot of ways. It doesn't hold as well for me. It's still a great movie. It's still out there. I still recommend everybody see it. But it's not one that like I have to revisit periodically or that I spend a lot of time dissecting the film.
You know?
It was a fun comedy. It had a lot of good people in it. There was cool effects.
Well, and I like...
That's what I'm hoping out of this
and
one.
And I like the idea. Like if someone said, hey, I've got a cool Ghostbusters costume with a fusion pack or whatever and everything, would you wear that for Halloween? Heck yeah, I would. That would be awesome, you know? Or drive an Ecto-1. Drive an Ecto-1, that would be awesome. But
I had a jumpsuit, a black jumpsuit that my parents got me for Christmas one year that was a Ghostbusters one.
See, that's cool to me. But
it was, but it was complicated because I was a child, and it had a zip that went all the way down the front, and so particularly precocious and shitty bully-type character in my neighborhood liked to try and completely unzip it, and I usually wasn't wearing anything underneath. So that caused some trauma. Outside of that, I was pretty cool.
But that said, I mean, I think we bought the movie, and we only did that because... the kids hadn't seen it, and we thought, okay, well, this is a pop culture thing, and you're old enough, so we'll show it to you. And we don't, like, watch it all the time.
And the second one's pretty lame. It's watchable, but it's pretty lame.
So, like I said, the fundamental aspects of plot and character and relationship and stuff, I like it all better than the original. It's just wasn't executed that well, but I don't think it was bad. Like I said, I'll have to see it a second time before I can say how I felt about it, and I'll see it again. And I'll be curious to know what your thoughts are once you've seen it.
I'm not going to tell you.
But, I mean, we've taken up enough time. You probably have a lot of things to say about your 2 weeks.
No, not really. The book is progressing, albeit slowly.
That's good.
Just shy, just a hair shy of 36,000 words. I'm hoping when I take this vacation to get some writing done there.
Oh, good.
We'll see. I'm really in a section right now where there's travel going on, and so a lot of things, I'm writing a paragraph or two, and I'm like, this is going to be completely different, possibly multi-chapter story right here, but I'll get to it later, because I'm like, the time it would take me to try and hash that out right now, I just want to get a draft done. And we're getting into a lot of heavy emotion. I mean, I talked before that somebody's dead now, and stuff, so we're dealing with a lot of... This is sort of the crisis point within the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm having a whole lot of what is a realistic reaction for our protagonist to this in ways that I haven't had to deal with before. And it makes it weird to write. But, you know, I'm kind of, again, telling myself at this point, just fucking write it.
Yeah.
See what comes out later.
Yep.
I don't think I've seen it. I saw a movie called Shark Exorcist.
Oh.
I don't recommend
it. The person exorcises sharks, or the exorcist is a shark.
Right? Or person, or people are being possessed by sharks.
Or the person loans a possessed person money.
Loan shark exorcist.
Yeah.
No, and it's the reality is shittier than all of those.
Oh, okay. Those actually all sounded pretty good.
Yeah, no, this
when
is
I said
not,
them.
And here's the thing. I can't 100% tell you what the plot was because it didn't make any sense.
Okay.
I don't recommend to anyone, including people who like bad movies. Like, it wasn't so bad it was good. It was something involved. First of all, it took place in a lake.
Where sharks live.
No sharks. At some point, somebody brings that up and then never mentions it again.
Sharks don't generally live in lakes.
No, exactly. At some point, somebody brings it up and then never comes up again. And I mean, this
just
was the
randomly, you know, sharks don't live in lakes. Oh no, I didn't know that.
Well, no, because they're trying to solve the mystery. Because so I believe satanic nun, like you do, kills somebody and sacrifices her to in the lake.
Oh.
And so a year later, people get eaten by a shark, crappy CGI, demon shark.
Oh, that's living in the lake.
That's living in the lake, and pretty early, somebody like almost gets killed. And then the rest of the film, she's maybe the shark? Because she frequently ends up getting in the lake with people and, like, they're swimming. And she's doing the whole, like, femme fatale thing. Like, you think she's going to, like, make out with them or whatever. She never does. But then eventually, like, swimming around them, giving them, like, sexy eyes, she dips under the water. And then cut to a shot of CGI shark. And she never comes back and then the person dies. So maybe she's the shark, or maybe she, like, summons the shark. I don't know. And somebody tries to exorcise the demon that is possessing her and the shark and everybody. And at some point, when they're trying to figure out what's going on, somebody's like, but sharks, I thought sharks lived in the ocean. It's like, they do. And then that's it. Like, they're like, yeah, that is stupid and weird. And then they never mention it again. The one thing that is good about this movie, and I mean in the so bad it's good, one thing. So there's a lot of people die. It's a horror movie, you know? About a shark. People die. And most of them die in the Jaws style. The opening Jaws. Like, you're swimming, and then you're pulled down, and you thrash around, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't ever see... The shark is always a free-floating CGI thing. Just to let you know, remember? Shark. And then you don't ever see it.
Mm-hmm.
But so a lot of people die that way. Problem is 100% of those deaths, and I want to say there's like 7 of them, they are all done in a lake at about waist deep water.
Really?
I know this for 2 reasons. Pay very close attention here. They're subtle.
Okay.
The first one is, and this is the least subtle, of the 2 very subtle things. When they're thrashing around, they kick up mud.
No kidding.
Like, it muddies the water.
Yeah, that's probably, that's a dead giveaway.
But the second reason, every time, and I do mean every time, seconds before, we see them standing up just to their waist in said water.
Mm, okay, yeah.
And I mean, like, but then we try and pretend we didn't, because every time we see them, they're standing up, the water's to their waist.
Mm.
Cut to, like, a close-up or something, I don't know, for a few seconds. Maybe sometimes cut to the shark or whatever.
Mm.
Cut back, not just the same same shot. Like, they just, like, it's the same shot, but they've clearly gotten down on their knees, so now it's up to their neck, and then they start thrashing. But it's like there's no hiding, not even an attempt. It's literally the same shot. Like, I just saw you stand up. Stand up. Is it incredibly flat? No, I've seen the shark. He's not flat. Like, what is going on here? Yeah, so it's terrible. I don't recommend it to anybody. I'm playing a video game called Trine right now.
Oh, yeah?
It's a little downloadable one on the PlayStation. We got it because you could play co-op on it, and we thought that would be cool. It's not a really good co-op game. It's a side-scrolling action puzzler, sort of.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And you have 3 there's a fantasy story that ends up with 3 characters sharing one body. So basically you switch between the 3 character types and they all 3 can do different special things.
Right.
And it's when you're playing it together, you each have a character that's like that. And in general, cooperative puzzle solving as a genre is tricky. So we started playing it and we did not particularly enjoy it. But then recently I started playing it by myself and it's pretty fun.
Okay.
And I really like the fact that there's always more than one way to do something. And I found that very cool, because I like puzzle games, but so I was like, what's the solution? And this one, it's no, here's obstacle. You have to get from here to there. Do it. Mm-hmm. However you do it.
Yep.
So I've been playing that, and that's kind of fun. Oh, I guess I do have a lot of stuff. So we started our new game, our new D&D game.
Yeah.
We now have 6 players.
Oh.
Because an old friend of our GM's, who normally GMs, is playing. He's apparently only going to play every once in a while, but he's playing. So we started that. I think in general the group really liked it. I was a little frustrated. I think some of that was I was tired. Some of that is he did a pre-existing module.
Okay.
And it was kind of clumsy. It didn't really work well. I feel like it stressed him out, because frequently we'd ask questions like, wait, I gotta find where it is in here, instead of, you know, just saying. There were just things that didn't make any sense. So the general plot is we are taking a wagon full of a whole lot of supplies from one town to another town for a guy.
You're escorting it, or...?
He already left. He left ahead of us because he had to get there to do something. Mm. So the 6 of us are just doing it. Like, we're driving it. We're the whole thing.
Gotcha.
And we're supposed to deliver it to this specific place for him.
Okay.
This place in the town. They tell us where. Da-da-da. On the way there, we get to a point where we find some dead horses in the road because a bunch of arrows were shot at him. And it turns out it's a trap. Goblins come out and we fight the goblins or whatever. We find, based on the horses, that these are clearly the horses of the people who were working for.
Oh.
And it is clear that, like, some goblins took them away.
Oh.
Down this other road.
Oh.
Now, here's the thing. The other road is too small for the cart.
Oh, so you either have to leave it and save him, or leave him and get his stuff to the town or something.
Except, yeah, but I was like, there's 6 of us. Somebody can take it, and the rest of us can go. And the GM's like, no, don't split up the party. Which makes sense. But I'm like, okay, then this module has just left us no option. Because it's going to be dumb to just leave this. Because they make a big point of, like, tons of supplies in this cart.
Yeah.
Like, it's just packed. I'm like, it's going to be dumb to just leave it. When we've got 6 of us, we're like, no one take it along. We're just going to leave it here and hope nobody takes the stuff. And we can't take it there. So they've painted us into a corner. And apparently, what the module expected you to do was tie up the oxen and then, yeah, just leave the cart. But I was like, how far out are we? He's like, a couple hours. And we're all like, screw it. We're going to go drop off the cart and then we're going to go back.
Come back, yeah.
Because, I mean, based on this, it's been days already. So who knows? So, but just weird things like that throughout the world.
Yeah.
And then I feel stupid about this, but I think part of the reason I was frustrated, I'm playing a half-orc paladin. So I'm playing a guy who beats things, basically, to death.
Half-orc and half what?
Human.
Hmm.
All the half-races in D&D are half-human.
Really?
Half-elf is half-human, half-elf. Half-orc is half-human, half-elf. Somebody's calling on the phone. That's weird. On my cell phone. But I missed the call, and I don't recognize the number, so... As Jesse Hyatt would say.
Jesse Hyatt didn't say that.
But he would. but I'm the fighter guy, you know? I'm kicking the crap out of things. I could not land a blow to save my life. And I kept getting killed. Like, I'm in the best armor of anybody in the game, and I almost got killed twice.
Huh.
And, like, little dudes had to run up and kill goblins on my behalf. And after a while, it was just very frustrating, because it's like, you know, this is the one thing my character's supposed to be good at, but I just rolled that poorly. But, I mean, and so it's a dumb thing, it's a little kid thing to be annoyed about, but I think on part of my brain was I was just getting frustrated, because I'm like, I'm not good at anything. which, you know, is a common thing we all had when we were younger in doing this, but at this age, that's not the deal. And because it was a module, there wasn't a lot of opportunity for role-playing. Because it was very much, you do this, like it was all sort of knocked out. So I was a little frustrated. The GM was a little frustrated, I think for similar reasons.
Mm.
And so he's going to adjust some stuff. But I told him, I said, be careful, because I really do think most everybody else had a lot of fun.
Because
we got a lot of gaming in. Everybody had a chance, even me, to be useful. There was a place where, like, they solved a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And people like that, you know, a lot of people liked the dice rolling, and we did a lot of that, so... We'll see. I think it's going to be cool, but yeah, it was a little bit weird to start. We did not see a movie, but we have started watching a TV series called Stranger Things.
Yeah, we watched that.
Have you watched all of it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me give you my take currently.
Okay.
And you can address to it, because we've watched 3 episodes so far.
Okay.
I still don't like it.
Oh, I didn't like it really at all.
Trish liked it, and I liked it enough to keep watching. Because the production, it was good. They're clearly going for something. Like, it's not a shitty low-budget thing.
No.
But even Trish is starting to think, because we have discovered, among other things, it's really badly written, which I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah, it is.
But it's a lot of, that's not how people talk. That's not what people would do in that situation, which is very odd. For those of you who don't know, it's on Netflix. It is 8 episodes. I'm assuming it's one of those where if it's popular enough, they'll probably make more. Like, they talk about its first season. But I think it's supposed to, right now, stand alone. You could speak to that better than I could, but...
Well, sure. Yeah, they could just leave it the way it is. I think they made it that way in case they didn't get another season.
And it's basically a horror thing. It's incredibly Stephen King-ish. Quite on purpose, I think.
But, like...
Well, yeah, it's not as good as, like, Stephen King.
Like college film project, Stephen King. It's pretty...
And it's set in 1983, and it's kind of a horror thing. And it's you know, small town, and kid goes missing, and then, oh, wait, something scary's going on. Oh, other kid shows up who came out of a government center that is nearby that is secret, and, you know, clearly something's going on, and X-Files shit, that kind of thing. And it has Winona Ryder doing an excellent job playing a woman with a missing child who is slowly fraying at the edges and losing her mind. And it's terrible to watch. She's doing an incredible performance that I have no interest in watching.
Yeah, basically, Winona Ryder has 2 modes in this whole thing. Maybe there's a third close to the end.
Freak out and smoking.
Yeah, it's just... I mean,
She's doing really great with the part, guess, but it's just not a part that's worth
it.
And there's a lot of kid and teenager relationship stuff that I just hate as a concept.
Okay, well, see, here's the thing. Do you know who the Duffer Brothers are? Who made?
No, not until this.
Well, they're...
You said, by the Duffer Brothers. I'm like, okay, I don't know. I did make the joke that in 10 years after they've both transitioned, they'll just be known as the Duffers.
They're young guys. I mean, they got some of their first big gigs, like, right out of film school or whatever. And as far as I can tell, nothing they've ever done is very good. This whole series is completely a nostalgia series. Completely. I mean, there's...
They're really working on the 80s vibe.
Yeah, they don't care about plot. They don't care about...
It feels like something that character development. Made in the 80s, too, in a lot of ways.
Well, that's what they're going for. Yeah. The stuff that was made in the 80s was, and some of it still is, fairly good. I mean, if you watched a lot of films in the 80s, and I didn't watch that many, but I recognize a lot of stuff. I mean, they have the Stand By Me moments. They have the E.T. moments. Yeah. I didn't see Goonies, but my wife...
You didn't see Goonies?
No, my wife's constantly pointing out to me all the Goonies moments.
You need to see Goonies.
I mean, it's...
No, because that's the thing. Dustin, the kid with the doesn't have the teeth yet and everything, is Chunk from the Goonies.
Okay, but see, this is
absolutely Chunk from the Goonies, and I feel really bad for him.
But it's not, and maybe some people think, well, that sounds cool on the surface of it, but they don't do it in any interesting way at all.
But this is what Trish liked when she started off. She's like, I think the only thing I like about this is the nostalgia factor. And then by the third one, she's like, okay, I'm getting ready to get done with this unless they start actually doing something.
Yeah, but it's never anything more than that. And I don't really have a lot of nostalgia for the 80s. I just don't. So it didn't engage me that way. Now, there was one performer in the thing that kept my wife and I watching. And if that performer is in the next season, we'll watch that too.
Who was it?
Well, I don't know if I want to say... I don't.
Because it gets more interesting later.
I don't want to give anything away.
Is it L?
Yes.
Okay, because I'm already impressed with
that. Oh, man.
Like, she's just doing a... Just from Jump Street, she was doing... I've used that phrase twice today. I've never used it before in my life. And I haven't heard it recently, so I don't know what that's
about. It's worth it just for that character.
She's really good.
Yeah, it's pretty much worth it.
I want to look her up and see if she's related to somebody. Her face looks really familiar.
That's what I thought, too. That's what I thought, too.
She looks like But, and it's weird, I want to, yeah, I don't know. But yeah, really young and doing a very good job. And I think, I mean, she also has some terrible dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
But in general, she's the bit that seems less of a throwback to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because her character is so opaque and ill-defined in ways that you couldn't have gotten away with in the 80s.
Right.
That's really kind of cool here.
Yeah, and the act... Her,
you're like, what is she doing? What is she capable of? What is she not? It's hard to tell on purpose.
And the acting is just top-notch. I mean...
Oh, yeah.
Compared to everybody else in the show, it's just so good.
Freaking non-verbal acting.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
She doesn't talk a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And she just expresses so much with her face.
Except for her, I wouldn't recommend the show to anybody unless someone is really easy to impress with 80s nostalgia. And some people are. Some people are so into the 80s that even a show that's not... To me, this show is absolutely nothing but these two guys who are too young to have known anything about the 80s, so I'm not sure where their nostalgia of the 80s comes from. Just, oh, let's have this in it, let's have this in it, and without any real effort to put it together in a cohesive way or to write it well or to direct it well, it's just not very good. But some people are into that, and that's fine.
And it seems to be somewhat popular. My hunch is we will watch the rest of it, because, and I hate to say this because it's a dumb thing, but it's a low barrier to entry. It's 8 episodes, all available on Netflix.
Yeah.
So I'm like, we can just tear
through
it.
See, we watched something called Shannara, is it called?
Oh my god.
We watched that.
Really?
Yeah, we watched it. We watched the whole thing, because they were, you know...
Bad news, it's going to get a second season. It's on MTV.
Well, here's the thing, though.
And it's going to get a second season.
Here's the thing, though. That's another show that was just not very good. But there was one performer in it that was like, wow, she's pretty amazing. And we watched all the way through, and I thought... I mean, because she was so much better than everybody else, it's ridiculous. Yeah. But it was worth watching just for her. It's like, well, she looks really familiar to me. Who is she? And I just couldn't figure it out. I finally had to look it up. She was the little girl in Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh.
And now she's, I don't know, 18 or 19, and she's in this show, and she's really good. I mean, you know, she was...
She was really good in Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, she was outstanding in Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan's Labyrinth is on that list of movies I loved and never want to see again.
Yeah, well, she's every bit as good in this, and like, I mean, nobody else even comes close. I mean...
Yeah. You know that's based off of a hugely popular, hugely huge series of novels,
yeah,
right?
I heard that.
I read the first one in fifth grade. And it was so... It's really dense stuff. It's Terry Brooks. So it's really dense descriptions of locations and things like that. Which I don't know how that translates into movie very well. And what I find interesting... is minor spoilers for the Shannara books, I guess. So, Shannara is a fantasy series, an epic fantasy series, but it eventually sort of comes out that it's also a far future post-apocalyptic series.
And that's right up front.
That's what I was going to say. The show introduces it that way.
Yep, yep.
The trailer had a picture of an ivy-collared space needle. But in the books, as far as I understand, that sort of doesn't come up until way later in the series.
Well,
but it's tricky, because he wrote books, then he'd write prequels and sequels, and in fact, he wrote a completely unrelated series that's set in the present day, and then tied it to that one.
Well, and it doesn't make very much sense in the show, because I think they said that the events of the show were like 3,000 years after this civilization that they don't know anything about had fallen. Well... I mean, none of the, you know, wasn't there a series, a documentary series about after people, what would happen if people disappeared?
And this was not it.
No, I mean, after 3,000 years, there would be a lot less that you'd be able to see.
Yeah.
And they find some things that are intact. Oh, it was preserved because of, no. Yeah. It wouldn't have been preserved because of that. And so it's kind of ridiculous that they're saying so much time has passed. But, like I said, I forget this girl's name, but her performance was really good.
A couple people have brought it up as a YA version of Game of Thrones, and I was like, a Game of Thrones with less violence and hopefully little to no rape. I might be interested in that.
Well, it's...
Because I do like epic fantasy, but
it's,
I don't think I'll ever watch it.
And see, I don't like epic fantasy, so it's not. I wasn't going to connect on that level. But
I like epic fantasy in my TV shows and my movies. I'm just slowly discovering I'm not as crazy about them in my books.
You might like this.
Yeah.
Did you try to watch it?
No,
or?
I haven't. I mean, it's on the list. I'm not even sure why we decided to jump the line with Stranger Things. I mean, I still have 4 seasons of Silicon Valley. We still have, what, 3 seasons of Transparent.
We're watching Veep right now.
Veep. I want to do Veep. You need to see The Goonies, though. I still, like, just for...
At this point, it's almost a badge of pride that I've never seen.
I know, but you're a film guy. Yeah. And it's seminal in a big way.
I suppose.
I I'm not saying you need to see it because it's so awesome. I'm saying you need to see it because it's so
yeah,
part of the conversation.
It's like it would be like if I didn't... I don't want to put it on this level, but like let's say I'd never seen The Godfather or something.
It's not quite up there, but yeah, it's the same kind of thing. Yeah. There are really terrible movies out there. I mean, hell, if you're a real film buff, you should see Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Yeah.
Because in talking about films, and things lead back to that. Now, in The Goonies case, people like the Duffer Brothers steal from it, make homages to it, and so forth. In the case of Plan 9, they only do that as jokes in the movies. But it's still a thing. Like, it's part of the film body that's out there. And all that aside, I think it's a good movie.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's a young kid's adventure, and it's the 80s, so it's incredibly problematic in a lot of the fat character, the mentally challenged character, the Asian. Like, yeah, don't get me wrong. It's horrific in that sense, but I mean, you know, everything in the 80s was. Did you see Damon Wayans' character in Beverly Hills Cop? I mean, come on. Actually, if you ever watched an episode of In Living Color in which Damon Wayans was on it, you've seen that character.
Oh, okay.
Damon Wayans loved his gay character all through the 90s. But yeah, so Stranger Things, I've been sort of recommending it to people, explaining that I don't really like it. I'm not sure why I'm recommending. But it's the whole, like, it's a self-contained thing, you know, just watch it. And do its thing. I think that's all I got, and we're running out of time, so draw something. I'm sorry, people, I'm drinking out of a cup with ice. Wendy's didn't give me a straw, so it's more complicated.
More complicated. An abridged...
And even with the air conditioning on, I'm sweating profusely.
An abridged... question from Dave of Id.
A bridge question from Dave of Id.
Every cat you've ever known, living or dead, pick 5 to make a Voltron Lion Force. Oh.
That's awesome. I love that idea.
Let's see.
Now, do we get into, like, who's the feet and legs?
I don't know.
Have you seen the new one?
Well, I know Netflix? That Netflix has one, but yeah. I haven't watched it. The original was apparently kind of after my time, so I wasn't a big fan.
I was so big into the original and got several toys at Christmas and things like that. I was obsessed with the original. And now it breaks my heart because I see it and I realize in my head what I thought, what that show could have been. And there's some implication that they may be doing that with this one. Which is a similar thing when they rebooted Thundercats. Did you ever watch that?
Nope.
That show had tremendous potential. It was paced incredibly slow.
Mm.
And so it didn't work. But it was fascinating because Thundercats was a really cool show, but it had such disjointed mythology.
Mm.
And that's the thing with a lot of these reboots is... we're going to take an old kids show that was a really cool idea and make a story that actually makes sense. And I think that's what the Voltron one is. I haven't watched it, but I am kind of curious. But I loved the old one. I was obsessed with the old one. I just always wanted them to do more with the actual lions, you know? Like, that's what I hate with all of these forming a bigger robot things. I'm like, you barely gave yourself any time to do the other. And also, the big robot is not always necessarily the best thing. You got 5 dudes, a lot more mobility there. So, but, oh, cats to make up. That's such a weird image, too. But
we didn't name our cats on the farm very often, so I can't really. I mean, I can imagine them, but I can't name them.
Well, the tricky part is who's the head? Who's the smartest cat I've known?
Is that how it works? The smart one's the head?
That makes it, well, I'm assuming.
Okay.
The smart one's the head's the leader. That's true.
Oh, okay.
Also, by the way, I loved that so much, but I was American, so I didn't really get the context, which meant when I eventually then they switched over and showed the vehicle Voltron, I was so confused and freaked out. It was only much later I looked, because I didn't have the internet back then, that I found out that like there were like four different Voltrons that all did different things.
Oh.
The Americans knew the lion one best, but there were lots of them. Who's the smartest, most capable leader cat I've ever known? It might be Twiglet, which is a sad thing to say, but most of the cats I know. Grey Boy can't be involved. I hate to say it. I loved Grey Boy, but he's too skittish. He's too neurotic.
He can't be any part at all?
I don't think so.
Huh?
He would freak out and like, hey, our left leg just ran away. What's that about?
Gus would be a fist for sure.
Yeah, Gus would like to be in our... But he's such a baby. I don't know. Okay, Twiglet's the head. Who's I got to work with? I've got Addy. I've got Ezzy. I've got Tigger. I've got Mitsunai, which is a cat I grew up with. Alright, so... Addy and Ezzy are the arms.
Yeah, I figured that.
We gotta have Tigger in there, so Tigger's a leg. Mitzi's probably the other leg, so Grey Boy gets left out. And Twiglet's the head. Alright, what about yours?
Well, like I said, we had one great cat who, like, if the head is the leader, she would have to be that one. But, like, we didn't really have names for the cats. So I can't really...
But can you remember them differentiated?
Kind of.
Like, you could make up names we don't know, or you could just give a short description. But are you making your entire Voltron out of farm cats?
Yeah. That's the only cats I ever knew.
You know all these cats.
Oh, I suppose.
Nameless Hick Voltron.
How about my Voltron's just like yours, except this one cat I'm thinking of is the head instead of...
That's where it goes out.
Yeah, because she was smart. Really super smart.
Well,
smartest
actually,
cat I've ever known.
Ezzy might be the smartest cat I know, but she has social issues. I don't feel like she could lead. She's kind of the angry loner type.
Oh, I see.
But she would think she was leading.
Okay.
So maybe she'd be the blue lion princess, you know? If that makes sense. Addy would definitely... No, Tigger would definitely be that... The little kid one who, like, had his own mouse that he was friends with in the first one. That would be Tigger, because Tigger loved everything.
So what about Power Rangers? Would you put you a Power Rangers kid, too, or is that...
Yes. Yes, I was.
So are you looking forward to that movie?
No. I'm curious, because I mean, I also gave up. It's really hard to stick with Power Rangers for all 25 years. but Power Rangers did the same thing most anime did, which can keep your attention really well. You have a world-changing thing happen like every three episodes, and that was how it did it. It's like, oh, we had some episodes, and then just like two or three of them, and then suddenly, oh, our powers don't work. Oh, now we have these new cool powers. And then like two episodes, and then, oh, there's a new bad guy. Oh, wait, he has this whole arc where he becomes a good guy that goes over like five episodes. Now he's a good guy. And then, look, here's another new cool thing we got. And like, that's why they were always changing what kind they were. And I think I basically watched until they stopped continuity. Because, I mean, the original was Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yep.
And that went on for a few seasons.
Yep.
And then it was Power Rangers Zeo. But that was still Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. They just had their new power that involved the word Zeo. I don't even remember what. And stuff, and it went like that for a while, where, like, each new show was a change in, like, outfit, and sometimes it was a change of location, and frequently certain cast members would leave and stuff, but that was always part of the story. It was one continuous story.
Mm-hmm.
I believe either Power Rangers Space or Power Rangers in the Lost Galaxy just sort of stopped. They were just like, oh, it's later, and things are... And they had a couple of side characters come back,
mm-hmm.
but none of the rest of it really tied in, and they had a whole new set of Power Rangers, and at that point, I couldn't... Before then, it was vaguely sort of like a soap opera, so you keep watching and watch. Right. And at that point, I kind of didn't care as much, and then I stopped. And I was probably old enough to be like, you know, every episode's exactly the same. And then over the years, I would catch bits and pieces. They tried to do... I mean, Haim Saban did... I don't even want to say a spin-off. It was a rip-off, basically. The Knights of Tir na n'og. Did you ever see that?
Nope.
I think it only had one season. It was a medieval Power Rangers, basically.
Oh, yeah.
But it was only three of them, and, like, the fairies of Tir na n'og gave them their power. But they were, like, knights and had swords and shit.
Mm.
And it was in medieval times. But otherwise, it was totally just that show.
Yeah.
And I was kind of into that. But, yeah. I mean, I'll be curious... And, you know, Bryan Cranston and Elizabeth Banks as the villain and Zordon.
I didn't know Rose McGowan had ever been a Power Ranger.
I didn't either. She was a Power Ranger?
I guess.
It makes sense, but I didn't know that.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And the original Yellow Ranger is dead.
Oh.
I know that.
That sounds
The original Blue Ranger was basically forced off the show because he was gay.
Really?
Yes.
That's too bad.
It is a major issue of contention over the years. Yeah, and I mean, I went to see the Power Rangers movie in the theater. And at the time, it was absolutely necessary, because at the time, in my kid mind, I was probably like 12 or whatever, the story arc, like, the show wouldn't have made any sense if you didn't see that movie. I don't know that I ever went and saw they had a second movie later. I don't know that I saw that. But yeah, no, I was way into them.
Hmm.
No, I want to see Ghostbusters. I want to see Secret Life of Pets. Trish really wants to see Secret Life of Pets, too. And the other one, such that I almost went to see it at Film Scene the other day, I want to see Swiss Army Man. I seriously don't know how that's going to go. But I want to see it. Are you familiar?
No.
Oh, seriously? Okay. I got to tell you about this then. It's a small indie film. Here's the important part and the main reason I want to see it. Paul Dano and Daniel Radcliffe.
Okay.
Are basically the whole cast. Because it's a shipwreck movie. But it is a shipwreck movie where... Paul Dano washes up on a deserted island with the corpse of Daniel Radcliffe.
Hmm.
And the corpse of Daniel Radcliffe talks to him sometimes, sometimes it doesn't. The corpse of Daniel Radcliffe has sort of a lot of powers for being a corpse.
Hmm.
So, like, he expels gas, and they use that to do things. And just, like, crazy stuff. Like, they use the corpse expelling gas to, like, power their way across the ocean at one point. Apparently, it makes no sense, and it's whimsical as fuck. And, like, if you look it up, the genre listed is, like, seven genres with slashes in it. Like, nobody knows. And, like, people are like, yeah, it's crazier than it even seemed. And the person in question was like, it is incredibly whimsical. And I was watching a video, and there were other people, and they're like, and you don't like that? He's like, no, I did not like this movie. But because it's very much not my thing.
Mm.
But mostly, I really like Paul Dano, and I'm kind of falling in love with Daniel Radcliffe.
Mm.
I really feel like he's growing up into a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
And also, and as I get older, this is more of a thing, he seems like he's just a good guy. Like, as a person.
Okay.
And I take a lot of stock in that. And he's also incredibly handsome. And I don't mind looking at him at all. And the accent doesn't hurt. So, yeah, just it just appeals to me. I really kind of want to see it. But We'll see what happens there. Yeah, so it's weird that there's actual movies out. I kind of want to see right now, because that hasn't really happened.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Also, I should mention, because we have almost no time left, Trish and I, because it's now sort of in syndication, or it's showing up on Cartoon Network late at night, we're discovering Bob's Burgers.
Oh, do you like it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Which is funny, because when it first came out, I watched it, and I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is the same thing that happened with me with, like, The Simpsons and Arrested Development, is the characters are deeply flawed. And so to start with, it was kind of like, I don't like anybody. But, as with all those shows, maybe not Arrested Development, but eventually you get sympathy for them. And it's just fucking clever. Mm. We watched an episode last night that was all about bronies. Except it was actually all about, the show was called Equestronauts. and the oldest girl, who's like 13 or something, is a huge fan. And so she went to the convention. But it was all middle-aged men. And because they were the ones who, and they call themselves Equestricals.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And the whole episode became, so like, she has an old horse that she had forever, and it turns out it's really rare, and so this guy, like, basically cons her into giving it to him, and they want to get it back, and so they basically, but she can't really mix amongst the middle-aged men, so they teach her dad all about the show, and have him dress up and pose as an equestricle to try and get it back. And it's just so full of stuff. And the character, the kids, you know, there's her and she. People really like the show because that character, the oldest one, it's a really accurate portrayal of an awkward, just hitting puberty and discovering sex teenager.
Mm.
And, like, all the craziness that goes with that. And then there's the youngest child, who's Kristen Schaal, who's just the, like, completely sociopathic opportunist, but she's still a little kid. I remember an episode where, like, she found herself getting a crush on a member of a boy band, and she hated that because she thought it was so stupid, but she couldn't help herself. All this. And then there's Gene, who's the middle kid, who's just insane. So, like, they're talking to him in this episode on the thing, and they're like, remember, you gotta do this, and he's like, and you're walking weird. And he's like, Gene, I don't think there's anything I can do. He's like, I know, I just thought you should know. Just do something about that. You walk weird. Like, he just likes to just... He really wants to be involved, and he's very enthusiastic, but he has no idea what's going on, ever. And the wife is kind of crazy. It's a fun show, and it's tons of people I know and like. Eugene Merman, Kristen Schaal, H. John Benjamin, Paul F. Tompkins, there's a lot of side characters on it. Ron Funches was doing a character in this last one. Like, it's a lot of people I like. So, check that out, people. But mostly, I'm sweating to death, so I'm sick of this shit. So, go home, listeners. Unless you're already there, then just, you know, you can turn it off. Go to the blog. Tell us how this sounded. It's very important to us. I don't mean the content. Fuck that. I mean the background noise. And also talk about other stuff. TheMagicalTalkingHat.com. How do you feel about the Equestronauts? Like us on Facebook, because I pay myself to say that, I guess. I don't know. Keep listening. And most importantly, I'll form the head.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.